From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. In a moment, we're going live to France, the battle between good and evil with Graham Hancock. Get ready for that. And next hour, Power Crystals with John DeSalvo, the incredible spiritual and magical practices of crystal skulls. Well, here's what's happening. Now, some of you, when you go grocery shopping, use those reusable bags. Most of them look green. You know what I'm talking about. You bring them in there, you fill up your groceries, and out you go again. Well, listen to this story. You might want to think twice about those bags. Oregon investigators have traced an outbreak of norovirus to a reusable grocery bag that members of a girls' soccer team passed around when they shared cookies. The soccer team of 13 and 14-year-olds traveled to Seattle for a weekend tournament. That was back in October 2010. At the tournament, one girl got sick and spent 6 hours in a chaperone's bathroom. Symptoms of the bug, often stomach flu, vomiting, and everything else that goes with that. On Sunday, team members had lunch in a hotel room, and guess what? They passed around the bag and eating cookies at hell. They grabbed the cookies. On Monday, 6 girls got sick. Oregon scientists have determined that they picked up the virus from the grocery bag. Our food safety expert, Jeff Nelkin, on the line with us here. Jeff, how does this happen?
Hi, George.
Hi.
Very simply, you know, we all are getting into the habit of getting these bags. And, you know, when we go shopping, as an example, let's say they're meats, chicken, you know, whatever products we have there, a couple of drops in the bag, in the warm car. After about 2 hours, you have enough bacteria, maybe tenfold multiplication. But the good news is that if you would have taken those bags and thrown them in the washing machine, you would have knocked out 99.9% of the virus.
How about the plastic bags that they give us at the stores? Are those safe?
Well, those haven't been used, and, you know, if they've been kept in a clean environment and warehouses that are rodent-free, it shouldn't be a problem.
So the bottom line, Jeff, if you're going to take these little carry-on bags into the grocery stores, wash them all the time.
Yeah, and or sanitize them. You know, when you walk in, they usually have those little containers, you know, with the sanitizer. So that you can pop out those little, you know, moisturizers.
That's right.
Right? So you could give a quick wipe if you didn't do that. But the washing machine definitely will dilute 99.9% of the problem.
Jeff's website, foodsafetycoach.com. Thanks, Jeff. Good points. After investigating the death of a 29-year-old woman and severe injuries in 2 other consumers, the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission has recalled 21,000 inflatable Bonsai in-ground pool water slides. If you have one of these, Walmart stores, Toys R Us, they've agreed to offer full refunds for the slides that are returned to them in case you bought it from them. The Consumer Product Safety Commission determined that the slides were defective and could deflate suddenly, allowing the user to crash to the ground. The commission also found that the slide is unstable and can topple over in both still and windy conditions. And around most of this country, as people are beginning to go swimming, be careful. If you have one of these, take it back to the store. Dog breeders who skirt animal welfare laws by selling puppies over the internet would face tighter scrutiny now under a rule change proposed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The change would subject dog owners who breed more than 4 females and sell the puppies electronically, by mail or over the phone, to the same oversight faced by wholesale dealers as part of the Animal Welfare Act. That law was written in 1966, set standards for care for animals bred for commercial sale and research. Retail sales were exempt from inspections under the assumption that anyone who visited the store could see whether the animals appeared healthy and cared for. But the internet opened a new venue for puppy sales. And thousands of large-scale breeders who advertise there have not been subject to oversight or inspections. The proposed change seeks to close that loophole by ensuring that anyone who sells pets over the internet, by phone or mail order, can no longer do so sight unseen. Sellers either must open their doors to the public so buyers can see the animals before they purchase them, or obtain a license and be subject to inspections by the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. Now, get this story. Santino, a male chimpanzee at a zoo in Sweden, is devising increasingly complex attacks against zoo visitors. At first, Santino was famous for throwing rocks and other projectiles at visitors who annoyed him. Now he has improved this technique, which requires spontaneous innovation for future deception. Now, researchers have never heard of this before. A researcher, Matthias Osvath, he's a lead author of a paper about Santino, explain what the clever chimp is doing. He says after a visitor group had left the compound area, Santino went inside the enclosure, brought a good-sized heap of hay that he placed near the visitor's section, and immediately after that, he put stones under it. He also appeared to have placed projectiles behind just before he went in after the hay. After this, he sat down beside the hay and waited. When the visitors came back, he waited until they came really close by, and without any preceding display, he threw stones at the crowd. The calculated surprise attacks on visitors demonstrate very advanced thinking, usually only associated with humans. Martine Collette discovered that she had the ability to diagnose and help injured and sick animals. She is the founder of the Wildlife Way Station, and we've got her on the line here. Martine, this is an incredible story. They never knew this before, did they?
Well, you know, there are discoveries made every day by the scientific community because they test something and they run extensive programs to ensure that what they say is verified and true. However, people who work with chimpanzees on a daily basis find them to be incredibly bright. They can think and plan for the future. We have chimpanzees here that they would be out for a walk somewhere and all of a sudden they find something that they want. And we will say, you can't have that because it's not good for you. You get it away from them. 1 week later, they come by the same area and they know you're going to say no. So they will distract your attention to someplace else. Then they run around and they pick up the exact object that they saw a week before.
Now, in this particular case, Martine, with Santino, he's planning for the future. Why is he ticked off at visitors? Why is he tossing rocks at them?
Well, not knowing Santino very well, I can't tell you specifically, but normally chimpanzees use display mechanisms to establish who they are. In the world of chimpanzee, if you're not part of a troop, you're a stranger or an enemy that must be either driven away if you're an enemy, or if they don't know you and they want to show how big and strong and tough they are, they display. Part of a display mechanism is to beat bushes, break branches, throw things. If you give a chimpanzee a barrel in an enclosure, they will knock that barrel from one side of the other, displaying about who they are. I'm big, I'm bold, I'm strong, I'm wonderful. And they all do that. And it's generally, it's a dominance display.
Interesting. What's new at the Wildlife Way Station?
Well, our chimpanzees are still as clever as they always have been. truly. You know, to have chimpanzees in your life is to sort of glimpse where we may have come from. I know a lot of people may not believe in evolution and so on and so forth, and this is not a conversation about that. But when you work with chimpanzees, some of them have an intellect of a five-year-old child. There are others who may be as intelligent as an 80-year-old child. That's pretty smart.
It sure is. By the way, if you're interested in helping out any of the animals at the wildlifewaystation.org is Martine's website, and they always can use a little help there. Thanks, Martine. I always love talking to you about animals. Cheap mortgage rates have made home buying and refinancing a little more affordable for those who can qualify. And already the 30-year loans, they are going down again. The lowest long-term mortgage rates since the 1950s, 3.83%. Unheard of, isn't it? Well, Tomorrow, for the first hour or two on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk about the Mayans and the Mayan calendar. But archaeologists have unleashed a stunning array of 1,200-year-old Maya paintings in a room that appears to have been a workshop for calendar scribes and priests, with numerical markings on the wall that denote interval of times well beyond the controversial cycle that runs out this December, having some researchers saying, look, it looks like the Mayan calendars go on and on and on way beyond 2012, whatever that all means. It's a great story. And here's another one for you. Prince Charles of Britain, he had a little go at reading the weather during a tour of the BBC Scotland headquarters. The BBC's Sally Magnuson handed over to Prince Charles, who delivered a specially written script.
Let's take a look at the weather forecast now. I'm delighted to say we've got a new member of our weather team tonight. Let me hand over to him now. Your Highness.
Well, it's an unsettled picture as we head towards the end of the week. This afternoon, it'll be cold, wet, and windy across most of Scotland. We're under the influence of low pressure, and this weather front pushing northwards is bringing cloud and outbreaks of rain. The rain, of course, will be heaviest over the borders and around Edinburgh, where it could lead to difficult conditions on the roads.
There he is, Prince Charles delivering the weather. Graham Hancock up next. We'll talk about his latest work, Entangled, and also Good and Evil. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. He's with us for the hour, Graham Hancock, live. He's in France. Graham Hancock, of course, recognized as a true thinker who raises legitimate questions about humanity's history, noted author and researcher, Fingerprints of the Gods, of course, and Entangled. Graham Hancock back on Coast to Coast. Graham, how are you?
I'm good, George. Good to hear your voice.
Hey, I'm good. And what's the mood out there in France with the election of the new leader there?
Well, I have to say, I'm not an expert on that. I just arrived in France for my son's wedding, but I think it's one of these changes that's taking place in the world right now.
I think so.
I think it's a sign of the times. Things are. People are impatient with the way things have been. It's just unfortunate that I don't think we have as much choice as we believe in this world we live in.
Well, that is so true. And what's new for you work-wise?
Well, I've turned 60 now, and I decided.
You old man, you.
I know. It's unbelievable. It just seems like yesterday I was 16. But I decided to just try and exercise my writing skills in different directions, and still dealing with the ancient mysteries that have been the focus of my nonfiction work, but writing novels. And I have a new book out called Entangled, which is a fantasy adventure novel, and it deals with the mystery of good and evil and with time travel. It features angels and demons and two young women, one 24,000 years ago in the Stone Age called Rhea, and another today in modern Los Angeles, who are literally entangled in the quantum physics sense. They're brought together by an angel to do battle with a demon who travels through time and who is seeking to mislead humanity. And the book is I've received some very good comments on the book, and the book is violent. I have to warn readers of this.
Okay.
It does deal with violence and cruelty, but I felt that I couldn't write a book about good and evil without showing the evil. Ultimately, there is a victory for the good, and I believe good always does show through in the end.
I think you're right, Graham. I think you're right.
I think it always shows through. But at the same time, I think there's some problems with New Age ideas about a kind of generalized woo-woo goodness, and that there is no such thing as evil. And I believe evil does exist. I believe it's a real force in the universe. And I think it's part of the human predicament. I think that our responsibility as free individuals is to make choices. And if the universe did not present us with this choice, I don't think we would have the opportunity to learn and to grow and to develop, which is why I think that that in many ways evil is deeply integrated in the structure of the modern state, and indeed in the structure of modern mainstream religions. I'm not saying that those religions were always evil, but I'm saying that it has crept into them down the ages. So what the state is doing these days is taking responsibility away from us adults. It's doing everything it can to say, you know, we do things for you. We're going to look after your health. We're going to look after your security. And in doing that, they're taking away our right to choose and learn and grow and develop. And I think that fundamentally evil is behind this. And I think even science, although it's responsible for many good things, has contributed to this, because it's created this view that we are nothing more than material beings, that we may be reduced to the matter of which our bodies are made. And therefore, science tends to believe, although it has no proof for this, that there is no life after death, that when we die, we're just dead and there's nothing else. And therefore, this leads to an attitude that there are no consequences. There is nothing to be responsible for except our daily lives, whereas if we understood that we have an immortal destiny, it might cause us to consider more carefully how we treat others and how we operate and act in the world. So I think in some ways evil is a force that denies human sovereignty, that leads us not to be responsible for ourselves, that leads us to devolve responsibility upon others, and those others then use it to lead us down dark ways. And those dark ways are very evident in the world today.
Well, this battle between good and evil, Graham, of course, has been going on since the beginning of time.
Yes.
Why is it there? Why do we need good? Why do we need the evil? We seem to have a balance here.
I think it's very interesting. If you go back, for example, to the ancient Egyptians, and as you know, I've done a great deal of work on ancient Egypt, mm-hmm. you'll find that the notion of good and evil are fundamental to their society and to their high wisdom. They never denied that evil existed. They said it's real, and they manifested it. They typed it as the god Set, who represented the forces of darkness and chaos and cruelty and control. And opposing him was the god Horus, the god of light and truth and goodness. And always through the Egyptian story, we are given the choice between these two polarities. And I think that there is a wisdom in that, because if we lived in a universe where there was no choice, then we would simply be kind of meat robots. You know, we would
of course,
not.
Yeah.
There would be nothing special or unique about us, and there would be no opportunity for us to grow. See, I believe that we are souls incarnated in bodies. I think the very ancient religions were right on that.
Yes,
we are not bodies. The body is a vehicle for the soul, and I believe that the soul incarnates on this incredible, beautiful, amazing garden of a planet, to learn and to grow and to develop. And part of that learning and growing and development process is making choices between good and evil. And those choices can operate at a very personal, individual level, right down in just minute day-to-day decisions that we make every day. And it really boils down to this. In a decision that we make, are we adding to the unhappiness in the world, even by the minutest amount, or are we reducing, are we taking away the unhappiness in the world? I think we need to ask ourselves those questions. And then at the level of states and religions, those questions become magnified onto a global scale. And it may well be that the decisions that we human beings make about these issues have implications far beyond ourselves. I've come to believe from my research, from my experiences, that we're immersed in a vastly more complicated reality than presents itself to our five senses. And that this reality influences us whether we like it or not, and that we influence it, and therefore we must be very conscious of the broader non-physical aspects of reality, and particularly conscious of the nature of the soul. And in ancient Egypt, they had this notion called the weighing of the heart or the weighing of the soul, where at the end of one's life, they symbolized it as your heart being weighed in the scales against the feather of truth. And you are weighed up for what you've done with the incredible gift and opportunity of life that you were given. And what makes me fearful in the modern world is that the modern state and modern religions, by taking away our responsibilities from ourselves, are denying us the opportunity to live full and free lives.
Graham, when we come back, we're going to talk more about good and evil. Graham Hancock, our special guest, and we'll take some calls with you, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Dr. John DeSalvo joins us as we talk about his work, Power Crystals. It's an incredible research project, and you're going to hear all about it on Coast to Coast AM. In a moment, we'll go back to Graham Hancock, live in France. And welcome back to Coast, Graham Hancock with us, live in France. Graham, there are some people who are inherently evil. No matter what you do, they are evil people. Were they born that way? What happened to them?
I actually think, George, that that's not the case. I think that it's not that they're born that way, but I do think that they make choices throughout their lives that that lead them that way. It's interesting. There's been work done recently, scientific work on psychopaths and serial killers, and it's been shown that. This is really quite revolutionary new work. It's been shown that the areas of their brains that normally deal with empathy and feelings of sympathy towards one another are much less developed than in those of us who are not sociopaths. And this is, it's very easy to jump to the conclusion that therefore their sociopathic behavior is caused by that lack of brain tissue in those particular areas. But I would put it the other way around. I would say that they have not, through choices throughout their lives, they have not exercised those areas of their brain that lead to empathy. They have made choices mm-hmm. that were selfish. They have made choices that were cruel. They have made choices that did not nurture other human beings. And in making those choices, they failed to develop, if you like, the muscle of empathy in the brain. I believe we have to put choice as fundamental, because I don't think that we are simply robots made of meat. I think we are souls in bodies. We are here for a purpose, and there are huge forces operating on us in the universe. And those forces, broadly speaking, in very simple terms, can be divided between light and dark, between goodness and evil. And every time somebody makes a choice that causes pain, that takes away the sovereignty of others over their own lives, that that subtracts from the opportunity of another person to live a full life. And after all, what could more subtract from that opportunity than killing another person? Mm-hmm. That's the ultimate removal of another person's sovereignty. Every time somebody makes those kind of choices, whether on a very small and minimal scale or whether on a very large scale, the forces of darkness in the universe triumph and grow and are energized. And that's why I think we have to be very careful about what we do with our lives and the choices that we make, right down at the notion of good and evil. It sometimes seems too big for us as individuals to handle, but that's exactly the mistake. As individuals, we are confronted with those choices every minute of every day. And I think it's important that that we be aware of that. And we ask ourselves every time, even with a very simple action, just a little hurtful word that we say to somebody or a little selfishness that we exercise, we ask ourselves, am I adding to this other person's sovereignty or am I taking away from it? And we should always try. We can control our own lives. We can't control anything else.
That's right.
But we should make those choices for good rather than for evil. And that's why, you know, I tried to explore this mysterious area in a novel. And could I just take this opportunity, because I know that my readers see me very much as a non-fiction author.
That's true, they do.
and Fingerprints of the Gods,
sure,
of course, was my big non-fiction book. And
that put you on the map, didn't it?
It put me on the map back in 1995, and it sold 5 million copies around the world, and it dealt with the possibility of a lost civilization. But I'm the same person today. But I'm exploring these mysterious ideas through the realm of fiction. And so that's, I have, if I could just say this to your listeners, I want to introduce people to my fiction. And so I have a special offer this week through my website, which is www.grahamhancock.com, where for people with electronic books of any kind, my novel Entangled is available at just 99 cents, under a dollar, until Sunday. And what I guess I'm saying is
99 cents.
99 cents. It's normally $10 or $11. It's available at under a dollar just until Sunday. And what I'm saying is, give me a chance. Support me in this new area that I'm exploring. Even my publishers are very skeptical. You know, I made a from their point of view a bad career decision when I decided to try and write a couple of novels. Because, of course, it's easy for them to make money on my nonfiction.
That's right.
Much harder to do with the fiction. So I'm asking people, give it a go. And again, you know, it's 99 cents. It's just available till Sunday. The offer is there, prominently displayed on www.grahamhancock.com. Just download it, give it a go, and see what you think. And it does come with a health warning. The novel does deal with issues of violence and good and evil. And it's a time travel novel.
Okay.
Which I believe this is a force that flows through the universe and flows through time, and the whole human story is defined in terms of the choices we have made, either for good or for evil.
Okay, let's take some calls here, and we'll talk more about good and evil, Graham. Sherry is in Lackawanna, New York, first-time caller. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, how are you?
Good, glad you got through. Go ahead.
Hi, I have a couple questions for you. You're speaking of us as, okay, free individuals, and you're speaking of good and evil in so many different matters, like there's a new age religion. But also, you're stating your book as a form of fiction. Am I correct in this?
Yeah, the book is written as a novel, but it explores, I believe, big ideas.
Okay, well, I want to take that a little step further.
All right.
Religion has become a business in today's age. It's become a business in today's age.
Religion.
It's more of a business or a profit. Unfortunately, people overlook the little thing called faith. But the things that you were exploring in your novel are more real than the average person realizes. Good and evil exist on a level that people just cannot comprehend. And you're talking about us as free individuals. Well, yes, we have that free will. But that free will comes from a source. If you have faith rather than religion, you can tend to realize some of those influences, like you were talking about your sociopaths, they may be open to certain doors of a darkness that most people don't realize is actually there. But they may be more influenced by it. And rather than, you know, finding religion, which you're right, our government's a new form of religion. Please forgive me for saying that.
So is science.
But when things are coming out of mainstream now, you know, they're going against the norms of what everything once stood for. I don't know if I'm explaining this.
Well, but you're right, Sherry. Religion isn't a barometer of good or evil. And Graham, I assume you would agree with that.
Well, the thing I have to say is that this force that I would call evil, that I would call the force of darkness, has unfortunately entered religion. You know, there was an ancient system of knowledge called Gnosticism, which was destroyed by the Roman Christian Church around 300 years after Christ. And what they said, which of course sounds horrific to anybody who's really committed to mainstream Christianity today, is that actually the entity that we, whether we're Jews or whether we're Christians or whether we're Muslims, whether we worship Allah, whether we worship Jehovah or whether it's the Christian God, that entity is an imposter, that the devil, in fact, entered mainstream religion and presented himself to us as God. And for the last 2,000 years, whether we call ourselves Christians or Muslims or Jews, it's that demonic entity that we have in fact been worshiping. I know that this is a very horrible idea for people to deal with, but what happened was that the Christian church at that time took the Gnostics who had this idea and they burnt them at the stake. And if you look at what the mainstream religions have done down the thousands of years, rather than what they say, if you look at the walk they've walked, rather than the talk they've talked, what you see is a consistent commitment to evil, whether it's burning people at the stake. Can you imagine a more horrific and ghastly death to inflict on a fellow human being that the Christian church did, whether it's stoning a woman to death as happens today in Islam.
Yes.
Whether it is generating fear and hatred and suspicion in the world, which all of the mainstream religions do. They talk the talk of love, but they walk the walk of fear and hatred and suspicion. So I think we have to watch out for this dark force wherever it is, in the very place that we believe goodness lies. It may have inserted itself as an imposter.
Well, no doubt about that. And as you look at this, though, I would agree with you that good eventually beats evil, even though it's a tough battle, isn't it?
It's a tough battle, but ultimately, and again, I go back to the ancient Egyptians on this. Ultimately, the forces of light will triumph. But we play a part in this. We human creatures, we little human beings, have to make those choices. We have to say, this is something that's under my personal sovereignty. I can make a decision every minute of every day that adds to the light in the universe, even if it's a very small decision, just a tiny decision about how I relate to my fellow man. I can make that decision. I don't have to make the decision that adds to the misery and the darkness. And I think we have to take responsibility for this. And I think we have to realize that there are forces that delight and that joy, that take joy and pleasure and laugh as they watch the human race heading down the road to destruction right now. You know, sometimes we talk about 2012. I've never believed that we're confronting a blind geological disaster. Humanity, we are quite capable of destroying this beautiful garden that we've been given, and that's why it's vitally important. That's why a radio show like Coast to Coast is so important, because you are part of the process of awakening humanity, that you're part of the process of allowing people to take back their sovereignty over themselves and not allow these ruinous, negative, cruel, wicked forces to lead us down the road to fear and hatred and suspicion. It's fear and hatred and suspicion generated so widely in the world today, manipulated by the state to turn us against one another. Even notions such as patriotism, I have grave doubts about. I feel as a human being that my loyalty should be to fellow human beings, regardless of what piece of land they were born on or what religion their parents happen to have, that we should live in communities of ideas. Anything that divides us from one another and tells us that, you know, we, the in-group, must defend ourselves against that evil group, I think we have to be very suspicious of that, and we have to move. We've got a great opportunity now. We stand at a crossroads in the human story. For the first time, the whole human race, through the internet, through modern communications, we're talking to one another. Let's use that opportunity to learn and to grow and to develop and to embrace a new way forwards. And for goodness sake, let's get these big, powerful, negative forces, the state, the mainstream religions, let's get them out of our lives and get into a new way of sympathy with the spirit. We have to reconnect with spirit. This is one of the catastrophes of the modern world that science has so much encouraged, that taught us to believe that there is no such thing as the soul, that's persuaded us that there is no such thing as spirit. We live in societies today that have severed their connection to spirit, and that's what's killing us all and killing the world, this beautiful, beautiful world that we've been given, this incredible golden jewel of a planet that we've been given, and we turn our backs on it and plug into, you know, reality TV and buy into ideas of fear and hatred and suspicion. What a mistake, and what a triumph of evil, and how important it is that we take responsibility to fight that every minute of every day.
Let's go to Ryan in Los Angeles, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hello. It's good to be on.
Good.
Hi.
I just had, I changed it up a little bit, but I should get out an experiment I did on YouTube a while ago that has to do with good and evil, where I posted a song I made, and then my buddy and I started pushing traffic towards it. Got, I think, like 500,000 views, and a lot of people were leaving bad comments, so we just erased all the bad comments and left the good ones, and then people just started leaving good comments.
That happens. You know, that happens on the internet, boy. Believe me, I know there's a few out there.
Unfortunately, the downside of the internet is that it encourages people not to take responsibility in a way that they would in direct face-to-face communication with each other.
Exactly, Grant, because they hide under the cloak of these, you know, names, you
know?
Yeah,
and then we see, you know, we see the demonic side of humanity coming out in the internet, unfortunately, in these terrible hatreds that are expressed. In blind comments, you know, on the internet. It really is quite an extraordinary phenomenon. And again, whenever somebody goes online and makes some hateful, negative comment about somebody else, they should really think about what they are doing.
Well, they're talking about themselves, Grant.
Yes.
You know, I mean, they're not happy people.
They're diminishing themselves. They're diminishing this golden jewel of a planet on which we live. They're diminishing the whole human race. Every time we do that, every time we're negative and hurtful towards others, we are multiplying the forces of evil and minimizing the forces of light. And we have to take responsibility. We have to own those decisions and realize that they will impact upon us, not only in this life, but beyond this life. There's an ancient saying, which is that, you know, if an injustice is involved, far better for you to be the victim of the injustice than the causer of the injustice. You know, in this life, we hate being a victim of an injustice, but to be a causer of an injustice is a thousand times worse, and it impacts on our immortal destiny in ways that we can barely imagine.
Graham, you're an expert on the Egyptians. They, too, saw the difference between good and evil, didn't they?
Very much so. It was fundamental to the ancient Egyptian notion of what we're here to do with our lives. They see the human life as a 70 or 80 or 90 years, however many years we're given, as an opportunity to create a work of art out of our lives, to work on it slowly, to make mistakes, to learn from those mistakes, as a sculptor does when he or she knocks a bit of stone off in the wrong place on the sculpture they're making. They can correct that mistake by working around and developing it. We have time in this life to learn from our mistakes and to make ourselves better people, and most of all, to recognize that we've been given an incredible opportunity to live in a human body, and that we must not allow dark forces to take that opportunity from us and make us live mindless lives. We must live full lives, fully knowledgeable about what we are doing, and very knowledgeable. We must be aware every minute of every day that we are making choices between good and evil, and we should consciously choose the good, consciously choose to help and to nurture and to grow others rather than to do the opposite. And so this was typified by the ancient Egyptians in the conflict between Horus, the god of light, and Set, the god of darkness, and it was a very dualistic polarity kind of system. But there's that interesting relief from the Temple of Dendera, which shows one figure with two heads, and those two heads are the head of Horus and the head of Set, and that seems to be telling us that this duality is fundamental to the nature of reality, and that it's there to teach us, it's there for us to learn from. And we have the opportunity to grow in these choices we make.
Are we constantly being bombarded, Graham, by evil forces that want us to become evil?
I believe we are. And I've tried to explore this in the novel. I believe that demons, that those entities that have been called demons down the ages, are real things, and angels too. We are immersed in an invisible, normally inaccessible to our senses, if you like, supernatural realm. But it is part of us, whether we like it or not, and it's better to get to grips with it and deal with the fact that it is there. And there are entities which seek to bring us down, and this, I think, they manifest through you know, the UFO and alien phenomenon today. Shamans call these entities spirits. In medieval times, they were called fairies and elves, and I think there's good and evil in these entities that interact with us.
Well, you are spot on, Graham Hancock. And by the way, Graham's latest book, Entangled, it is fiction. For a couple days, you can get it for 99 cents if you're into the electronic book world. His website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Graham, be well in France. We'll see you when you get back. Up next, we talk about power crystals with Dr. John DeSalvo, right here on Coast to Coast AM.